Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to this week's episode of Firefly Willows LIVE. Our host this week is Heisey Lutmers with Revolution. Join him this morning for a journey into the realms of the angels. Hear a message from the angels for all our listeners and the world, channeled to us by Heisey's guest, Nathaniel Evans. Nathaniel is a singer, musician, composer, conductor, and singing teacher, as well as an angel reader and communicator. Heisey and Nathaniel will explore the question, what should I do with my life? Listen and find out how creativity and self-expression can help lead us to spirituality and self-discovery. Heisey and Nathaniel will also share the Kabbalistic cross and lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram, a technique to connect with and draw into and around ourselves the energies and power of the archangels. And the last part of the show offers you a chance to call in for live on-air readings. Call 646-716-5510 or Skype in from the Blog Talk Radio show page for your own personal angel and tarot reading. We're excited. Give us a listen. Firefly Willows LIVE Roundtable is an opportunity for all of our hosts to come together and share their thoughts, experience, and insights on a variety of topics. Listen in as each host takes a turn as moderator. This week, join Heisey Lutmers with today's roundtable topic, Thrive versus Survive.
Welcome everyone to our roundtable discussion today. I'm joined in Studio C by Mildred Lynn McDonald.
Hello.
John Caracella.
Good morning.
And Deb Caracella.
Good morning.
And our topic today is what you think the difference is between surviving versus thriving. When I was thinking of this topic, it made me think of some song titles like I'm a Survivor or I Will Survive, and I actually think it would be better if we could rename those songs and if we sang I'm a Thriver or I Will Thrive. Because for me, the definition of surviving just means whatever I can or need to do to get through it. Whereas thriving means I'm not just getting through it, but I'm willing to take one extra step, often of my own initiative, in order to be able to do that, so that I can say, where is this going to take me? What am I going to do with it? What am I going to learn from it? How am I going to utilize it? How does it challenge me? Which really means, how is it motivating me to move forward, to grow, to evolve in some way? So like with the song titles, that's why I would rather say I'm a thriver rather than I'm a survivor, because it's not just celebrating the fact that I got through it, but it would then also indicate that I learned, evolved, changed, grew in some way as a result of it, rather than just got through it and that's all it was. Thriving, I think, indicates that we are healing, that we have processed something, that we have released baggage around something. I think, importantly, we no longer feel like a victim, or we no longer feel as if we are defined by something. Versus, yes, it's something that happened to us, but that's not what I am defined by. So therefore, how do I utilize that and where does that take me, rather than I get stuck in being that? So my first question to everyone is simply what you would say your definition or thought is on what it means to survive versus thrive.
Well, for me, survival seems to be rudimentary and basic. So it means that my basic needs are met, mind, body, and spirit. But there's not a joy, there's not a looking forward, there's not an uplifting vibration. Thriving to me is a word of action, activity, excitement. When I think about thriving, I feel, just saying the word, I feel energetic. So that's where they both kind of hit me. They also hit me on both sides of a continuum. And I feel that there's a word inside, there's a vibration between them, a pivot vibration. So survive would be on one side, thrive would be on the other, and then right smack in the middle, there's a neutral pivot vibration.
I reflect on thriving when I say the word thrive, or I hear the word thrive. I also feel an energetic uplift in the form of extra energy, extra vitality that is being applied to fulfillment and joy. Somehow I'm growing and harvesting at the same time when I'm thriving. When somebody says, you know, I'm surviving, I also get a kind of an energy jolt, but it's not the same vibration. It's a lower vibration, but it's definitely one of energy is being applied. The engines are running hot. There's effort and purpose and you know, dedication, if not desperation involved. But it's a very energetic state. If you say, I'm surviving, you know, your chances are you're not just hanging out by the beach. I think there's an interesting place in between surviving and thriving, which isn't quite the pivot point that you describe. It's this place of quiescence in some way, where almost like sleep. Sometimes you can think of it as a place of tranquility, right? Serenity. The negative of that coin is numbness and disaffection and apathy. So I'm not sure that I think of like one goes from surviving to thriving through a pivot point. I would kind of tend to say that either you're surviving or you're thriving, or you're doing neither. You're basically asleep.
And not in the physical, what you do at nighttime, asleep. He's referring to the numbing oneself through substance abuse or just distraction or just checking out.
Or you could literally be just so still that you're not thriving, because you're not, you know, when we talk about thriving as a state of energy, that excess energy has vitality in it, that's growing and harvesting at the same time, when you're in that completely still state of deep sleep, you know, it's like hibernation. That isn't necessarily good or bad. It just is.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm thinking.
But there's a difference between that deep level of stillness and stagnation. Because hibernation is not stagnation. And deep sleep is not stagnation, because there's still a lot going on.
Well,
this is at a deeper level.
Is hibernation thriving?
I would say hibernation is a tool or a method or a system that supports the ability to thrive.
And or the ability to survive.
Well, on a physical level.
Right. That's why I'm saying it's like this place in between that feeds both, can feed both, can serve both, but isn't either.
I think it also, your definition of survive determines which side of the coin that stillness meets. There's survival in the sense of exertion of will, there's that energetic movement that you were talking about, and it's a forward dealing with kind of movement, and then there's survival from the victimhood point of view, where you're enduring and you're fighting, but you're enduring the pain and the negativity and the circumstances just to get to the next morning, and victimhood versus the force of will, where one is taking control of a situation and putting action and energy into it to move into thriving. So
enduring and resisting versus clawing and scratching.
Right. I have a tendency to think of my grandmother as a survivor. She, every single day, she got up, she did what needed to be done, and she went to work, she did the whatever, she took care of things, she would go down the hill to get the bus and come up the hill after the bus. But her daily life wasn't empty. It wasn't just enduring to get to the next day. It was, this is what needs to happen. But there are still moments within that that are, I don't think she resented it. I don't think she was unhappy with it. Probably would have been pleased if things were just a little bit easier. But that was just life. And this is what you did. This is what you got up and you did and you took care of it. And then, you know, once a week or maybe at the end of the day, you had a chance to chat with a friend and you got a laugh in. So is that thriving or is that surviving? Is that a victim or is that someone who just understands that force of will, this is what I do and this is how I get there. But it's surviving.
Well, but I would say that that's thriving because ultimately I think thriving comes back to your personal choice in terms of what are you going to do with that?
Mm-hmm.
And so even your grandmother was choosing not to just give up and give in to the drudgery
mm-hmm.
versus, yes, that's a necessary component of how I have to live my life. However, I can do things on my own to somehow enhance that, make that more than just doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that's somebody who actively makes sure that they meet with a friend every day after work to have a laugh in order to balance out the day. Or actually, it makes me think of prisoners when they go into prison and then they study to become a lawyer or to learn the law. They're thriving in prison. And a lot of people would think of them as simply surviving
mm-hmm.
in prison. But they're thriving because they've made the personal choice to turn the situation around, to utilize their situation so that they are not going to be a victim of the crime they committed or a victim of the system they've ended up in. They're creating an opportunity and a way for them to move out of and beyond that. And those words, because, you know, you, Deb, talked about moving into something, and Mildred used the word that thrive is this sense of, you know, an uplifting energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I just said, you know, moving out of and into something. So there's a sense that thriving has a more active component to it, or a sense that it's taking me to something else, whereas surviving feels very flat because I'm just kind of getting through it. But then there's a sense then it's just going to repeat again, and then it'll repeat again, rather than I'm ever actually moving beyond it, higher than it, and higher than it can just be that internally I am elevating myself by using it as a spiritual practice, using it to, you know, if somebody feels stuck in working every day, they could use their lunchtime to read a book on philosophy. So at least they're elevating their own intellectual self amidst what they feel they have to do to survive, which turns it into thriving.
So thriving has a component of the active pursuit of something that is fulfilling.
Right. And even if it's to look at something and say, what can I learn from this? Even if it's the most challenging thing ever, if we can at least turn around and say, what does this have to teach me? Then we have elevated it. We have moved it beyond and into something else.
That's probably a really good point for people listening who feel that they're in survival mode. And they really don't know what to do with it. The point about looking at what the lesson is or what does it have to teach me, or like you recommended during your lunch break, even for 10 or 15 minutes, elevating yourself through reading or maybe taking a walk in nature. So it's quite possible to shift the survival vibration into thriving.
You know, in my last role in high tech, I was not thriving. I was definitely not thriving. I was surviving, and there was literally no time during my workday to do anything other than survive. And for that to be the case for me, I was really, really burdened and busy. And I don't think there was a way for me to thrive. I think the thing that I got out of it was once I left, I realized that there were things I was holding on to about myself that were preventing me from thriving. And one of those things was that role, that job, that notion of who I was, that was actually the primary impediment to me thriving. And I actually had the choice to not do that anymore, to leave that work. And sometimes I think being in survival mode is actually the lesson, that you don't have to be in that mode. You can choose something else, even if you don't know what it is, right?
So for someone who's out there in a similar situation, what could we offer them?
Well, I would suggest that even in what you just described, you can find a way to thrive, even if it's in very, very small ways. So throughout the day, maybe you said, okay, before I have to go into each meeting, I'm going to say I need to go to the restroom. And you may actually go into the bathroom, because that's the only private space you may be able to find. And even for a minute, do a breath exercise. Do a meditative technique to bring yourself back to center, just to release whatever stress or things were going on leading up to that moment, so that at least you enter into that next meeting without all of that carried into it. Or on your desk, have a bowl with little affirmation cards, and just randomly, if you're getting ready to get up and go someplace, if you just got off the phone, whatever, it's just take a moment to pull it out and read that little sentence of an affirmation. Because at least what that's doing is it's internally stimulating and supporting your ability to thrive, even if it's just on a mental or a spiritual level, amidst everything else that you may not be able to change.
And I think that's important. The key thing, who I was at the time, the tools I had at my disposal at the time, were part of the reason I was only surviving. Like I was stuck, right? And so something had to give in order for me to thrive. But the very act of having something give meant that I put my survival at risk. So I had to let go of the person who was surviving and the circumstances of that survival all at once. That whole circumstance had to be shattered in order for me to get out of it. It's interesting because I don't think of myself as having survived that, like this great scar that I carry with me. It was more like a death.
I'm wondering for people who are out there and who are in the same situation as John, and everybody's been in that situation in some form in their life, it's almost a philosophical question, because I know I believe I come equipped with everything I need to get through life and experience the joy of being alive. And there's always that subtle inner whisper guiding me. And even at times when things look very bleak or I was very discouraged or confused, I'm not saying I could clearly hear the voice, but I am saying that I have faith that the voice, and had faith that the voice did exist, and made an effort or a conscious mindfulness to try to find that voice, no matter how deeply hidden it was. Because there's not always going to be an external shattering for every person, but there's always going to be an internal voice that's steady.
Well, and I think what you said, and also what John was saying, was ultimately it brings it to me back around to thriving means it ends up being my choice whether I'm going to thrive or not. Surviving is one thing, but I have the choice of how I'm going to approach that, respond to that, deal with that. And I can thrive in any situation and in any time if I'm making the choice to do something that takes it to that next step or that next level that would be thriving rather than just getting through, which for me would be survival. So I would have to make the choice to take a moment before each meeting to close my eyes and breathe in and out and come back to center. I can't wait for something outside of me to create the right situation or opportunity versus I have to make the choice to work with what I have, but work with it in a different way.
I think that's exactly on point, because once I made the choice that surviving wasn't good enough, the action that I took was to leave, but it was the choice.
Was there just something inside of you that said, survivor no more, I want to thrive, or whatever that looked like, or enough is enough?
At some point it was like, I let go. I said, this is not important enough for me to keep doing this.
So if you could offer one simple tip
to people to move from simply surviving into thriving, what would it be?
That you have a choice to let go, if you want. So that you have a choice. You have to realize that you have a choice and where you can manifest that choice, how, you know, where it can be applied.
And I think from like what Mildred was just relating is coming to understand yourself and the fact that you have a choice and becoming aware of who you are internally. And then following the little voice that's whispering the suggestions for you, using tools that other people have discovered and made available. Find that within yourself that you can tap into and that brings you joy. With joy, even if it's a tiny little piece of joy in any given day, it's a movement towards and into thriving and not just being the victim and staying static and allowing a circumstance, events, whatever, to dictate what's happening within yourself. You have your control, you have your choice, you have the ability to go inside and be the master.
I have a couple of tips. One would be to seek out people who are thriving and surround yourself with at least one person who's thriving and observe. I've usually found if you observe someone for a period of time, the puzzle starts to fall in place because you're watching how they respond and interact with themselves and the environment. And the second tip I would offer is to speak with someone who has lived their life well. The role of elders in our society has been so diminished. One of the very important roles that the elders play, they've walked the road that you're walking now. They've experienced it, and to look back, they often have wonderful advice to give that resonates with people, and it shows their place in the community.
And I would probably offer, try to change your perspective or your attitude. Whenever you start to say something that begins with, I have to, stop yourself and instead say, I get to. Because if you start doing that on a regular basis in all areas of your life, you'll find that your attitude towards things changes and you won't fear or dread something. You may not look forward to it per se, but you won't be afraid to go into it because you know there will be something in it for you to take from it that will somehow be beneficial or help you to move to the next level of something or be an insight or something like that. So that would be my tip, is change that attitude or perspective from I have to I get to. And I want to thank Mildred Lynn and John and Deb Caracella for having joined us here today in Studio C. And feel free to continue this conversation on our Facebook page at facebook.com/fireflywillows.
Thanks, Hi C. Great topic.
Thank you.
Firefly Willows LIVE is proud to support Canine Paw Print Rescue, a new animal rescue group located in Pittsburgh, California. Canine Paw Print volunteers are experienced, dedicated, well-known, and loving. Hardworking, too. Canine Paw Print Rescue exists to rescue, rehabilitate, and ultimately to rehome abandoned, stray, and neglected animals from shelter situations. They work closely with shelters, other rescues, and the community to improve the lives of animals in need. Find them at caninepawprintrescue.org, on Facebook at facebook.com/caninepawprintrescue, or call 925-695-7297 for more information. Donations to support the animals may be made via PayPal to caninepawprintrescue@gmail.com. This tip of the week from Canine Paw Print Rescue. Just a few minutes in the car can cause deadly heat stroke to your pet. Your car acts as an oven, and cracking the windows has little effect on internal temperature. In many states, including California, It is illegal to leave your pet unattended in a car, and you can be charged with animal cruelty for doing so. When you see an animal left in a car, know that every minute counts as the temperature in a closed automobile rises approximately 20 degrees in 10 minutes, 30 degrees in 20 minutes, 40 plus degrees in an hour. Call 911 if you see an animal panting in a hot car. The best thing you can do is leave your pet home with the AC on a hot day.
My guest today is Nathaniel Evans, and Nathaniel is an angel reader and communicator, and we'll be talking with him later in the show, as well as Nathaniel will be joining us towards the latter part of the show to offer angel readings. So if you are interested in getting an angel reading, I would encourage you to call in at 646-716-5510, or you can Skype in from the show page. But right now, Nathaniel will be channeling a message from the angels for everyone listening. So, Nathaniel, welcome to the show.
Thank you, IC. It's my pleasure, and thanks for having me today.
And thank you for being willing to bring this message to us. And so I think, without any further introduction, I will simply say that I and everyone listening come to you and the angels with humility and open hearts to hear what the angels have to say to us at this moment in time.
That's a good and appropriate word, I see. So, listening to the angels is not very different than just listening in general, listening to somebody you care about, listening to a beautiful piece of music, or even looking at the sky when the sun is setting, or any of these beautiful experiences that are available as a part of daily life in the physical world as we know it, as we see it, as we experience it. So the angels have a word for us today just about being human. It's kind of funny because we're human, right? So what's the point of a talk about being human? Well, it's just that we are born as humans, and then it's our opportunity, or even our job, if we choose it, if we choose to accept the mission, to really experience and explore what our lives are for. That is, on a personal level, what it is for me to be human, and then in the broader sense of what is it to be a human being? That involves such questions as what is it to love, what is it to be loved, what is it to forgive, what is it to hurt, what is it to be healed. So the angels seem to have just a few notes for us today. Basically, there are a few things that I'm going to mention that are a part of daily living that can really take us deeper into a more direct knowing of our own nature, of what it is to be human. So the first thing the angels are highlighting here is love in human relationships. We're talking about the kind of love that's possible between friends, between family members, between lovers, between collaborators, be they artistic collaborators or business collaborators. Basically, in connecting with another human being in a meaningful, practical way in the world and feeling affection and knowing that affection, that is, you can think of it as a portal. That is an opening, a doorway into something transcendent, into an aspect of our nature which is infinite, and which healthy, normal, kind, and genuine human relationships actually invite us. Even a friendly handshake or a hello to another human being who passes you as you walk along the sidewalk, or a smile at a cashier, or the person in line in front of you at the grocery store. These are all opportunities to have real human encounters with other human beings, to experience that love is present in that simple way, in ordinary human love, is a doorway to knowing what love is. And that's an opportunity to know who we are. Love is the great energy, creative force, power behind and in and through and filling everything. And so this is a clear portal to it, just human affection. So we're invited and encouraged to appreciate that, be grateful for it, and to take care of it as best we can. And the angels are mentioning that means forgiveness. When things don't go so well in human relationships, forgiveness is the way that love can be restored. Not because what went down didn't hurt, or because we weren't wronged by another or we didn't wrong another, but simply because love is the real meaning of life. It's what's behind everything. And forgiveness is simply an opportunity for us to fully experience that love as present again when we or another or both of us or even a group has lost perception of love. Forgiveness is an opportunity to restore our perception to what is. And love is always what is. So the next thing the angels are pointing out quickly is creative expression. And this can take the form of any art, poetry, music, dancing, or appreciating the art created by another. And so this is a huge aspect of human experience. Of course, there are museums, art galleries, and movie theaters, and opportunities to express ourselves, whether it is in sketchbooks, in journaling, singing in the shower, humming a tune on the way home from work. But creative exploration, creative expression, and then receiving the creative expressions of others is an opportunity, another opportunity to know the mysterious nature of what it is to be who we are, to be what we are, to have those divine aspects of ourselves really explored in time and space. A way to invite that in materiality is to engage in creative expression and to receive the creative expressions of others. And the angels are really pointing out, especially where beauty is exemplified, that ancient trio of beauty, truth, and goodness is really what art is for and about. Telling the truth is beautiful and also good. It's a way to contribute to our fellow human beings and to be contributed to. And it's a way to explore and understand in a direct way, not necessarily in thinking about it, but in the direct and immediate connection that we feel in the moment of seeing a beautiful work of art or perceiving a tremendous performance or listening to an amazing piece of music or even just writing a poem and feeling some creative flow through my hand to the pen as it moves along the paper. There is an aspect of our mysterious nature that's being revealed in a direct way. And that's an experience that the angels really encourage and invite us to enter into. And the third thing they're mentioning today is the body. We all have them. We have bodies. There is a sense in which it is true to say we are our bodies, and our bodies are us. So to care for them, to really pay attention to what information our bodies are giving us, and they're always giving us information, even the feeling of tiredness or thirst or simple things like this, this is a message from you to you, from your body to your consciousness. And to attend to that, to pay attention to that, is actually a sacred thing. These bodies are the vehicles we were given with which to explore love, to explore what it is to be who we are. And so, in turn, to care for these bodies that we've been given is actually a sacred act, is a holy thing. To get enough sleep, to drink clean water, to eat food that nourishes the body, and then to use the body in ways that are of service, to use our hands to do good to others, to make beautiful things, to use our senses to perceive beauty, to put our attention on love, opportunities to be of service, places to bring healing, and as they mentioned earlier, to be creatively expressed. The body is the vehicle for all of this. So We ought to care for our bodies and use them well, and then also be of service in our bodies. Remember that our bodies are here for us to do good, so we have to take care of them and know that that's sacred, and also what we do in the body matters, even if it's something as simple as if a room needs to be cleaned and we clean the room, or if it's time for a nap and we take a nap. These ordinary movements in the physical body, these are, again, if you will, portals or opportunities to, in an immediate and direct way, to somehow know or experience an aspect of this mysterious nature of us, of who we are. And as we enter into that more and more fully, greater and higher dimensions of what it is to be, what love is, can be revealed in these ways through human love, through creative expression, and through our physical bodies and our relationship with our own bodies. All these are invitations, the angels are saying. They're invitations from heaven to experience and to know reality, to know truth, to know love in a way that it's as though it's invited down, or the beauty or the reality of the highest nature is invited into this present moment to be contemplated in those ways. So that's the invitations that the angels have for us today. And as many of you folks call in, if you're going to do so, feel free to ask questions about what was said, and also anything else you happen to be curious about. So that's a word for today. And we say thank you, angels. We're grateful for the message. And we also ask for your company and for the grace of your company as we live our lives, as we explore and learn what it is to be human, to be who we are.
All right. Well, thank you to the angels and to you for that.
So here we are.
My guest today is Nathaniel Evans. Nathaniel Evans is a musician on a journey. His exploration of life has moved him to explore a variety of mystical traditions, including Orthodox Christianity, inquiry, energy work, prayer, self-awareness, hypnosis, NLP, and many other forms and systems. His intention is to support you on your journey as you discover in each moment what it is to be human, and what it is that it means for you creatively as you explore and express that discovery. Nathaniel offers services that include communication and messages from the angels, coaching for discovering, fulfilling, and pursuing your life purpose, and support around healing and creative expressions of all kinds. Anyone interested in learning about themselves as a way of life may find sessions with Nathaniel profoundly supportive of their well-being on many levels. If you're interested in having a session with Nathaniel, you can contact him by emailing nathaniel.evans@gmail.com. So it is my great pleasure to welcome to the show today angel reader, communicator, and musician, Nathaniel Evans. Welcome to the show, Nathaniel, officially now. with your own in-studio applause and audience.
Yes, here we are bicoastally, right? I'm on the East Coast and you're on the West Coast, and yet here we are.
It is true. And I just wanted to let everyone know that the music they heard playing underneath the introduction there was actually one of your own compositions and you playing.
Yes.
And I believe it was Reiki music. Is that correct?
That was my off the cuff. I'll tell you a little bit about that. So one of the forms in which I've been trained is Reiki. In the West, they call the rank I have in Reiki a Reiki master. I don't like the word because it's not how they describe it in Japan. But anyway, basically, Reiki is a system which invites divine healing energy to be present and to flow wherever it is needed. And in the past couple of years, as I was healing from a very severe physical injury to my head, I was redirected and guided to focus on this combination of energy healing and music. I'm a musician, I'm a pianist, and do other kinds of music. And so I simply invited the divine healing energy, known as Reiki, to flow through my hands into the piano in such a way that it would bring healing and peace and love and consciousness, and especially healing of consciousness and also the physical body, to whomever hears. And so that's what you were hearing. In fact, I was using it as a part of my own healing process. I never really thought about publishing the music, so I just had to title the MP3 something, and I had, I think, three or four tracks. So I just, Reiki Music 1, Reiki Music 2. So they're not really properly titled, but that's the story behind that music you heard a little of there.
Ah. Well, and I think that when you have created a piece from those circumstances or with that intention even for yourself, it energetically infuses that music that you're creating and then is beneficial and helpful, and other people will tap into that energy and it will affect them or help them in similar ways.
Mm-hmm. It does seem to have been the case that people who have listened to it, a friend of mine listened to it all night at very, very low volume while she was sleeping, and she went to bed feeling sick and as though she was going to be sicker, and woke up in the morning just feeling good as new and totally refreshed. It seems to have a very beneficial effect on the immune system and on the disposition as well.
Oh, yeah. So can you tell us maybe just what it is that drew you to music? I know that I've seen like a couple of bios of you, and my goodness, the things you do musically, I mean, it's like chanting and conducting and arranging and composing and teaching and singing. What is it that initially drew you to music in your life?
I remember being a child who loved to sing all the time. As I remember what it was like to be a little boy, to be taught a song, even a simple children's song, the kinds of things that little kids are often taught to sing, like nursery rhymes and things. I remember feeling so much pleasure in the act of singing any song that my immediate tendency was simply to sing it again. And my mother reminds me that I would just keep singing it again. There's this marvelous aspect of God, of the divine energies, that there's almost a fascination with repetition that children also have. You'll see children take a block and put it through a hole in a piece of wood and then do it again and then do it again and then do it again. G.K. Chesterton said, very much in that way, the sun comes up every morning and then it goes down and then it comes up again and then it goes down and it comes up and then it goes down again. It just keeps doing that. And that's what I would do with any song that I learned. I would just sing it over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. And then I was in a church growing up that had a very, very active music program, and I was very drawn to it, so I started singing in a choir with a really wonderful conductor starting when I was 6. He's actually still a friend of mine to this day. And I started taking piano lessons when I was 7, and just being with music, and especially feeling the pleasure that music brought me in an immediate and direct and even mysterious way. It's actually difficult to explain how does music make one feel pleasure, because I think of myself sitting and, say, listening to a beautiful piece of music being played, and it doesn't seem like other kinds of pleasure or other kinds of corporeal experiences quite, because it's sort of mysterious. The music doesn't, it seems a bit invisible, of course. So we know what happens is the sound waves move through the atmosphere and they push on your eardrums, and then those eardrums vibrate at a certain frequency or set of frequencies, and then that's translated into a nervous impulse, and that translates into our brain, and then our brain sends impulses of nervous energy all throughout our body, and that can change the hormones that are being excreted and circulated by our endocrine system. It can actually dilate blood vessels. So it's actually a profoundly physical experience to receive music, but it does have an appearance of being very mysterious just to hear some sounds and then to feel such joy or such whatever series of emotions or inspirations or experiences are embedded in the music. It always just spoke to me, continues to just call to me with this ecstatic and beautiful call or longing that it set off in my soul. And it was just, vocation comes from a Latin word, and essentially it means a voice, or to hear a voice. And it was as though I could hear a voice within me, and that voice was so clearly guiding me to do music. That was just where my joy was. It's the most obvious following of bliss that I know. And so basically, that's pretty much what I've done with my life. I've felt the bliss, and I've heeded that call. And one of the things that that's had me do is many, 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 many different kinds of music. I actually don't know any human being who does as many different kinds of music as I do. Literally, I've never met anybody that I know of who does as many kinds of music as I do. And the reason that I do the kinds of music that I do, which is quite a few, is simply because I felt beauty, or I saw the beauty, or I could feel a joy in that form or in that expression. And so it was time to breathe that in, to receive that inspiration and then let it flow back out through me. And so that's been happening since I was a very little child and just continues to on a daily basis.
And it strikes me when you say that, you would sing a song over and over and over again, and how children like repetition of things. It's really through repetition of something, it's a very alchemical process, because through repetition of something is how you go deeper and deeper into its layers to uncover more and more and get closer and closer to its core essence. And I'm thinking that perhaps one reason why you've been drawn to and you do so many types of music is because you're not just being drawn to a particular style of music. What you're drawn to and really connecting with is that core essence of music that resides in any style of music.
Absolutely.
So you're being drawn to it, as well as you're performing in it or working with it, is really you going into that core essence and finding that essence in whatever style it is, which means you aren't afraid to delve into any kind of style or create a certain bias towards different styles, the way that a lot of people do, where it's like, well, I do this music, therefore I don't do that, or I don't like that, or I wouldn't necessarily go into that. But I think that's people that are somehow denying the connection to that basic essence of music itself, regardless of how it's getting expressed.
Absolutely. And you're right. That core essence that you're speaking of, that's what the angels are referring us to earlier. That actually is love. Love is the core expression, is the currency of the universe, also it's the animating force of the universe. And when I'm drawn to a particular style of music, what I actually am feeling or tapping into is love. And that has many different expressions. And there's not that there isn't music that I don't like, because there certainly is music that I don't like or music that I don't enjoy listening to. But what I do find there to be in the music that I am drawn to, which, as I said, is many styles, is there is an acknowledgement of the presence of love and a conscious exploration of it, whether it's a Rodgers and Hammerstein musical or a Balinese gamelan orchestra or mystical Sufi chanting or North Indian classical music, which I happen to love a lot, or Byzantine chant or a Mozart symphony or bebop, a kind of jazz, or freeform improvisation, kind of like that piano music with the Reiki energy behind it, which is just, that music wasn't actually planned. I literally sat down and asked for the energy to flow in a certain way through my hands into the piano, and it just did. So that's a spontaneous expression. But what all those forms I see have in common is that there is a conscious awareness on the part of the composer, performer, and necessarily then the audience, that there is something of love to be shared. There is even something like, say, think of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, which has a revolutionary feeling to it. Anybody who listens to it with any emotional sensibility at all can tell it's music essentially designed to get a crowd on its feet, full of an ecstatic feeling of human fraternity. Well, it occurs like that because that's what the composer meant to do. He was conscious of the possibility of human beings living in brotherhood, and he wrote it that way quite intentionally. So I find that that is definitely the currency, even if you think of something as, you know, well-known and commercial as like Stevie Wonder's I Just Called to Say I Love You, you know, huge hit song decades ago. Basically, still, the energy of love's in there. There's a conscious acknowledgement of, oh, how sweet it is just to call and say I love you to somebody. So there is that currency, that thread that I find that weaves together my musical interests. Humor can be that as well. There are definitely many aspects of music that are funny, and I feel that humor is another access to love and to sort of allowing and inviting love's presence to touch us in a way. Helps us to be humble also.
Well, right, and if we talk about our core, and often we think of our core, the residing kind of where our solar plexus is, in that kind of third chakra area, and when somebody has a true laugh, when they give themselves over to laughter, we call it a belly laugh. And so it's that sense
right.
that humor or whatever it is, it touches them, and then they're allowing that to take them to their core and just remember what it's like to live and be from there rather than in their head or, you know, that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned the angels. So I'm curious how then you were or how you came to an awareness and a connection to the angel realm and how you started to work with that.
Well, thanks for asking that. That's an interesting exploration for me, in fact. So when I began to learn more later in life, let's say late teens, early 20s especially, about what it's like to be directly in touch with the angels, I realized that I had been for a really, really, really long time. I just hadn't always known that that's what it was. So the angels actually have a word on this. Here's what they're saying. This is good for people to hear. And this is what they've got. Whether this makes sense to you or not, this is an angelic message here. So basically, the whisperings of the angels are never not happening, with very rare exceptions. With very, very, very rare and few exceptions, the angels are always surrounding and supporting human beings on Earth. Really, almost never is there an exception to this. The angels are there when we need support and we know it, and even when we need support and we don't know it. They're there whispering messages of truth, of encouragement, of support. Their presence can be felt in healing. But what, of course, I learned later in life was that their presence can be invited very specifically and dialogued with very specifically. And this has to do with the divine influence in general, with the presence of God and sacred holy beings in general is that they are always present, and they are always, if you will, whispering to the ears of our soul. But by the same token, their activity is most profoundly felt, generally speaking, when it's invited, and when it's consciously invited, and then there can be a dialogue. I have a curiosity. Let's say that I have a curiosity in my heart about, well, something's happening in my life, and I want to know to get married, let's say. Let's say that's what somebody's thinking about. Well, I kind of think I'd like to get married, but I don't have any possibilities for it. That is, I'm not actually dating anybody. So I'm actually single, but I'm thinking about... And then all of a sudden there's something the human being, me or whomever, is authentically curious about. That's what we bring to the angels, is our authentic curiosity. And it never fails that when we bring our authentic curiosity and we turn it heavenward, we are going to be met. There simply are not exceptions to this. Now, there are some important things to know. One of the important things to know is that when we are kind to others, it's actually an invitation for the angels to be present with us. There's a famous story in the Buddhist tradition, and I happen to like this story very much. And it's more important than one might realize on the surface. So I'm going to tell it. So this was many thousands of years ago, and the Buddha, famous for his happiness and awakeness as an enlightened being, sent a group of monks who were learning from him into the forest to meditate and to be. And so they did. They went into the forest, and they came out of the forest again, and they told him, "We were terribly frightened. There were demons in there that were always scaring us, and it was really hard to meditate and stay focused on these spiritual exercises." So the Buddha taught them something. He taught them what can be known of as a compassion practice, or even a compassion ritual, but it doesn't have a ritualized form. It's the way that we treat other people. He said, "Here is the solution. Only ever speak to each other with kindness and love and respect." And I'm paraphrasing the Buddha's words. This was thousands of years ago. But he told them, "Speak to each other with kindness. Rigorously treat each other with kindness. Only treat each other with kindness. Never a cross word. Even if you can, guard against even angry thoughts." And he said, "If you are able to treat each other with kindness and compassion in a thoroughgoing way, you will never be able to be frightened by these dark forces that were scaring you." And they went back into the forest, and they said, okay. So they go into the forest again, and they rigorously treating each other with kindness and compassion, and they were able to be in peace, that there was nothing that was able to frighten them. They were not even affected in any way by these dark energies. The dark energies can't even hang out around people that are rigorously full of kindness and love. They're basically frightened of any such thing. So my understanding is that what happens when we're rigorously kind to others, self-effacing, giving in a genuine way, not forcing ourselves but actually from our hearts, what happens is that's actually an unspoken prayer to the angels to protect us and surround us, because the energy of love is what animates and directs them. And so when we live in that way, we're sending out an invitation for them to be near to us. And then all we have to do is listen. We just have to listen. And listening takes many forms. In fact, one of the messages I got from the angels to me this last week was, listen in more ways. Listen in ways you might not have been listening. For example, as I sit at the piano and practice, I may have a certain feeling in my body from head to toe. It may not be exactly an emotion, or it may be an emotion. It may be a visceral feeling. It may be a sense of a certain flow of energy. But there are messages in all of that. and for us to gracefully align with the messages that are coming, it simply takes a willingness. It's really good to ask if we need guidance, and then just to listen, to know that it will come. And if you can't hear it, you can actually ask the angels to give you the message another way, or even to speak more loudly if you're getting something verbally, but you need it to be clearer. They're happy to turn up the volume or turn down the volume if the messages are coming too loudly. They are very, very, very easy to work with. They're very kind. And they also have an agenda. They always do. But that agenda is simple. It's that our highest good be fully manifest, and that we know ourselves as fully an expression of love and as love in truth. And so that agenda takes many different forms depending upon the particular human being or human beings involved. That's where the angels can be incredibly effective and helpful, because how love is going to fully manifest and express in my life, how that will exactly look, where I will work, who my friends will be, what music I'll do, who I'll teach singing to, all of these kinds of things, those are very specific. And the angels are happy to be involved in specifics of how love is actually manifest. That varies quite a bit from me to the next human being. And so calling upon the angels for specific guidance is often a wonderful way to see how love is meant to be manifest in your personal life, in your particular life, as well as to address higher order questions or to resolve conflicts or to be supported around healing in many different ways.
Let it be. Don't go, baby, please don't go. Baby, please don't go. Baby, please don't go back to New Orleans, because I love you so. Baby, please don't go. Baby, please don't go. Baby, please don't go. Baby, please don't go back to New Orleans, because I love you so. Baby, please don't go.
And we are back, and that was a nice little sample of Nathaniel and his singing talent. So hopefully you enjoyed that. And we have Nathaniel back on the line with us. Yes? Hello, Nathaniel.
Yes, I'm here.
Excellent. I wanted to quickly ask you, we often hear about different types and hierarchies of angels, mm-hmm. such as archangels, cherubim, guardian angels. Do you work with a particular type of angel, and do you have a kind of an explanation of what some of those differences are?
That's a great question. There are in fact 9 ranks of angels, and the earliest recorded very specific delineation of this is in the writings of St. Dionysius the Areopagite. Anybody can find it on Google for free. Just Google St. Dionysius 9 ranks of angels, and the ancient texts have been translated into English within the past couple hundred years, and it's very easy to read. He explains each of the orders of angels. And so here's something about how the angels work in my understanding. Basically, there's a togetherness among the angels and a perfect unity and harmony, and they also have specific jobs. For example, an individual human being has a guardian angel, but there are very holy circumstances in which it's necessary for an individual human being to have more than one guardian angel. So there are times when we can feel the presence of many angels around us. And the more we involve ourselves with a sacred and holy and beautiful and loving way of living, the more angels are simply going to be present with us. And that's something to bear in mind, actually. Another thing to know is that the angels are always willing to be invited. If we simply invite them, like let's say here I am sitting in my apartment right now in northern Florida, I'm just going to say, angels, I ask you to be present with me. May there be myriad upon myriad of angels present with me right now. If one is sensitive, it's actually possible to feel a shift in one's awareness and in a given space. Probably most people have had the experience at some point of seeing something in the natural environment, like maybe a beautiful rock face or a waterfall or something like that. Well, when we are contemplating beauty at the highest and purest level like that, there is a sense of awe that can be felt. That's actually the presence of angels. They're there when we're in that kind of an experience. And when we ask for their company, that experience is often something that meets us to let us know that they're with us. A sense of awe, a sense of beauty, a sense of profound, even unspeakable joy. And then inspiration, often an inspiration to, like for example, a few months ago I knew that finishing my formal music education in very specific ways was something that I would be deeply fulfilled by doing, but had been putting off. And so I had to rearrange my entire life, and I was inspired to do that. I was totally inspired to move 3,000 miles across the country, to do a 5,500-mile motorcycle journey across the United States as a way of perceiving the natural wonders of this country. And I gave away most of my possessions. I sold the business. I had all these different things that happened in the physical world, and they happened, I must say, with an effortlessness. And I feel that the reason for that is because of what was behind the physical movement was a profound inspiration, where my soul had a knowing as I was engaging in certain contemplative inquiry practices on a daily basis. There was a knowing, an inner knowing of that it was meant for me to change my entire life, to rearrange the externals of my life in a way that would support a more full expression of who I am on the inside, who I really am. And what was mysterious, what manifested out of that, was a great deal of the physical aspects of my life rearranged themselves almost for me. That's an example of when the angels are clearly and directly involved. We often see that things in the external world can actually change rather quickly. Somebody can call you you didn't expect to hear from, or you could get a job offer that you didn't even consider possible, or somebody with whom you had a conflict for whatever reason is suddenly willing to resolve it, or you need money for something and it just comes in the mail. And all these kinds of examples of where the physical world seems to be just flowing in support of something, that's a hallmark of the angelic presence. And the angels work in teams. This is essentially what the ranks of angels are. They're angels that, for example, are understood to be around the solar system, as it were, like to be guardians of the cosmos. There are certain angels that have been sent to people who needed wisdom about an incredibly refined matter of spiritual inquiry, where somebody had a desire to really know what was true about a very refined aspect of the way that the universe is at an ultimate level, and an angel was dispatched to give the message, or some great event was going to happen in history and it was announced, or the events of history had to be affected in a certain way. There are historical examples I know of where an angel appeared and stopped a river from flooding a village or something like that. Or for example, somebody might have been lost and absolutely unable to get back to civilization, and there was some mysterious human being, or what apparently was a human being, the presence of whom nobody seemed to be able to explain. Nobody knew the person's name, but the person was just kind and somehow knowledgeable to take that person to wherever he or she needed to be. This is an example of how the angels intervene. They can take what appears to be human form, although that's fairly rare, but it's certainly possible. They are also engaged in an ecstatic union, an ecstatic mystical union with the divine at all times. And this is one of the ways the angels work, as an angelic chorus, as an angelic army. There are all kinds of things happening in the universe, and human beings are a corporeal or a physical, an embodied manifestation of those happenings. And yet the angels have the opportunity to influence and to support the material manifestation of good, but they also have work on the invisible side, in the invisible non-corporeal realms. They've been referred to before as the bodiless hosts. They don't have bodies as we do, although they can appear to take human form if they need to for a work that they're going to do. So these different ranks of angels essentially have functions, just like in human organizations, in government or corporations or theater companies or any kind of human organization will have ranks and their different duties and tasks. That's actually a reflection of heavenly order. Heaven does have quite a profound order to it. And just so people are clear, it isn't necessary to know about the ranks of angels in order to have conversations with them. But it is possible to call upon a specific rank or order or kind of angel for protection. And their presence can be felt very palpably. For example, the archangels have a hugeness to their presence. If you even begin to contemplate the archangels and really just invite, like, say, something like, Archangel Michael, be present with me now. There is a feeling of sort of opening if somebody is sensitive to that. You have to have a sensitive body, generally a body that you take care of enough so that you're sensitive to things like this, but their presence can be felt, and there are other orders of angels, cherubim, seraphim, thrones, powers, principalities. These are angels that have a bigness. They have a cosmic duty. Although all angels are generally, when they do their work, what they're doing is a very powerful and profound work. So in ancient times, there have been depictions of even one's guardian angel as towering above a human being. I remember seeing an image inspired by an ancient understanding of the guardian angel, where the human being, an adult human being, looks to be like a little child next to his own guardian angel, because the guardian angel is so immense and powerful. Although an angel wouldn't ever, you know, appear in such a way generally as to frighten or scare you with his bigness or her bigness. But basically, there are roles and duties, and all of the things that they do are quite great and wonderful as far as anyone is concerned who really contemplates it. But they do have an order to the way that they work, and we're certainly free to call upon them in terms of their specific order. But again, we don't have to, and they're always working together. They're perfectly coordinated for our good. That's kind of a long answer.
That's okay. And actually, I think we'll look forward to hearing who and which levels wants to come through for people in the later part of the show during the readings. So I think that what we'll do, I'd like to tie up this section with a question that I like to ask each guest. And what I want you to think about is, without knowing who will be interviewed next on my next show, just intuitively or energetically or however you get the information and connect to it, what question would you have for the next person that will be interviewed on my show?
I would ask about kindness, and you have a relationship to kindness, or what is your understanding of kindness? It seems like there's attention on specifically kindness, human kindness, being kind. I would say, what does kindness mean to you, to whomever it is that's calling next?
Okay. So I think that we will finish this portion here because I know we're going to have you back in a little while in order to offer readings and things. And so first I want to thank you for having offered the wisdom and insight and sharing with us that you've given so far. And I just want to remind people that are listening that Nathaniel will be back later in the show after our next segment, the magical segment, to offer readings from the angels. And I will also, if you would like, jump in and offer a little bit of tarot as well. So you can stay tuned for that. If you'd like a reading, call 646-716-5510, or you can Skype in from the show page in order to get into the queue for a reading. And coming up next is our magical segment, and it's going to offer you what's actually a very powerful technique that has been done for a long time, and it is used to call in the archangels, four of them specifically, Raphael, Uriel, Michael, and Gabriel, and this is a technique that you can use for yourself on a regular basis, even on a daily basis. The magical technique that you are going to hear is a combination of two things, one, the Kabbalistic cross, and two, something called the lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram. This is a technique that is used in many magical traditions and is something that is used for a variety of purposes, but mainly the reason I wanted to demonstrate it here is one, it involves calling in the power and the energy and the actual beings of the archangels, four of them. And it is also something that is used in order to purify a space, clearing away any negative space, energy, entities, etc., so that you are surrounded by a pure, safe, protected, consecrated space. This is something you can do in order to create space around you, in order to do some form of spiritual or magical work, whether it's meditation or actual magical techniques. You could also do this in the morning in order to create a safe, protected, and very powerful, energized space around you to go out into the world. It's as if you're walking in a sphere or a bubble of energy and power. You will hear words that are said that are in Hebrew, because the name of the first part of the technique itself, the Kabbalistic cross, comes from Kabbalah, which is Jewish mysticism. And so there is a particular energy and frequency, resonance and power in the letters of the Hebrew alphabet, and the way that those are put together and the names that those are used to create evoke a particular energy or power, and that's why they are used here. You'll also hear the names of four of the archangels: Michael or Michael, Uriel or Uriel, Raphael or Raphael, and Gabriel or Gabriel. And the more important part is to kind of intone them, to really say them in a way where you feel them resonating and vibrating in your body. So don't just say those names or those words, but really focus on saying them perhaps in a deeper tone, or just find a tone by trying them in different ways that really resonates for you. Visualize what is being described even while listening. You will create a particular kind of energy around you even through that process. And I would encourage you at some point, if you feel this resonates for you, to try this for yourself and see how it might feel for you, as well as how you might feel differently when working in a space where you've done it, or how you feel differently perhaps going out into the world after having tried it. One other thing that you will hear in here is something called the banishing pentagram. One of the directions will be to draw the banishing pentagram. A pentagram is simply a five-pointed star with one point on the top, two on the left and right, two on the bottom, left and right. You draw that by starting at the bottom left corner, and then you draw up to the top point, down to the bottom right, over to the left, over to the right, and then back down to the bottom left. Here you'll be using your finger, or your first two fingers, as a focal point of your power. And if you have sacred tools that you would prefer to use, such as a sacred dagger or a wand, then you are certainly welcome to use those as well. But if you don't have those, then using your first or first and second finger as a focal point of power is what you would do for a technique like this. You will also perform what is called the sign of the enterer. Once you draw your pentagram, you will pierce the center of it with your finger. Then you will stomp with your left foot, pushing the pentagram as if pushing it outward to fill your space and out to the edges of the universe, and blow to energize it with your breath. We will begin with the Kabbalistic cross, and then that will lead into the lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram. Begin by standing facing east and point your forefinger or your dagger or your wand towards the earth. Look up and visualize yourself as a giant, powerful, towering figure standing on the earth. The earth is a small sphere upon which your towering figure stands. Draw your finger up towards your heart, point it upwards, and continue until your arm and finger are pointing straight up. Bring your finger down, touch it to your forehead, envisioning a brilliant light, white, piercing, and it comes down into where you touch your forehead and begins to fill your body. And with your finger on your forehead, you intone Ate.
Ate.
Move your finger down from your forehead over your chest and to your solar plexus. As you do that, envision yourself pulling that beam of white hot light, brilliant, piercing into your body and down through your body to your solar plexus. Continue to move the finger down in front of your groin and down until you are pointing straight towards the earth. Envision that white hot light now coming straight through your crown chakra, down the center of your body, and out the soles of your feet into the earth, and intone Malkuth. There is now a beam of white, pure light running straight through you. Now bring your fingers up and touch your right shoulder, and imagine white, pure beam of light is now coming in from the right side of you into where you are touching your shoulder and filling your body. It passes from your right shoulder, through your body, out your left shoulder, and into space. As you touch your right shoulder, intone the Gebura.
The Gebura.
Now bring your fingers over and touch your left shoulder. Again, visualize a white, pure beam of light coming into your left shoulder where you're touching, into your body, and passing through and out your right shoulder into space. As you touch your left shoulder, intone Vegedula.
Vegedula.
Bring both hands to your center over your heart as if in the position of prayer. Intone Le'olam.
Le'olam.
Release your hands and lift them up as if in praise to the heavens. Visualize yourself now in the center of a cross of pure white light. Beams of white light coming down from the heavens, entering your crown chakra, passing through your body and out the soles of your feet into the earth. Pure white light coming up from the earth into the soles of your feet, through your body and out the crown of your head into space. A pure white beam of light coming from the right through your shoulder into your body and out your left shoulder and into space. A pure white beam of light coming from the left into your left shoulder, through your body and out the right shoulder into space. You stand at the center of a pure white cross of light and energy. As you stand there, feeling the energy of being the center of this pure white energetic cross, intone Amen. And now we perform the lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram. Face east, or if you are working within a larger space that you were standing in the center of, move to the east. Put your finger before you, your arm straight out, and draw the banishing pentagram in the east, from lower left to upper point, down to lower right, over to the left, over to the right, back down to the lower left, while visualizing that pentagram glowing in bright blue flame. Perform what is called the sign of the enterer. Stomp with your left foot, pushing the pentagram as if pushing it outward to fill your space and out to the edges of the universe, and blow to energize it with your breath, and intone the name Yod He Vav He.
Yod He Vav He.
take your fingers and place them straight through the center of the pentagram that you have just drawn as if to pierce it. Without lowering your finger, turn or walk to the south as if to draw a line in front of you from the point in the east around to the point in the south. You are tracing a bright white line that will surround you. Once you face the south, draw the vanishing pentagram while visualizing that pentagram glowing in bright blue flame. Perform what is called the sign of the enterer and intone the name Adonai. Take your fingers and place them straight through the center of the pentagram that you have just drawn as if to pierce it. Without lowering your finger, draw a line from the center of the pentagram in the south, turning to the west, tracing a continuous white line to the point in the west. Draw a vanishing pentagram in the west while visualizing that pentagram glowing in bright blue flame. Perform what is called the sign of the enterer and intone the name Ahaye. Take your fingers and place them straight through the center of the pentagram that you have just drawn as if to pierce it. Without lowering your finger, draw a line as you turn to the north from the point in the west around to the point facing north. Draw the vanishing pentagram in the north while visualizing that pentagram glowing in bright blue flame. Perform what is called the sign of the enterer as you intone the name Agala. Take your fingers and place them straight through the center of the pentagram that you have just drawn as if to pierce it. Without lowering your finger, trace your line turning to the east so that you finish the line of the circle from north to the point in the east, and you are now surrounded by a perfect white circle of energy. Facing east or walking back to the center of your space and turning clockwise to face east, you now visualize yourself surrounded in every direction by four flaming blue pentagrams. As you stand in the center of your space facing east, visualize yourself once again as the center of that white, pure, Kabbalistic cross of light. Looking to the east, we now call in Archangel Raphael. As you do so, pay attention to what you might feel, what sensations may come, what colors you may sense or see, what smells you may have. Face east and say,
Raphael.
Without moving, bring your awareness to the space behind you. As you bring your awareness to the space behind you, we call to Gabriel.
Behind me, Gabriel.
Look to your right. This is where we call in the Archangel Michael.
And to my right, Michael.
Now look to your left. And this is where we call in Uriel.
And on my left, Uriel.
Bring your focus forward back to the east. Visualize yourself in the middle of that pure white Kabbalistic cross of light, surrounded on every side by flaming blue pentagrams. See the energies and the presence of the archangels on every side of you, and say,
For around me shines the pentagram.
Now visualize a hexagram in the center of your chest, and say,
And within me shines the six-rayed star.
And to finish, we repeat the steps of the Kabbalistic cross to seal this energy in and around us. And thus concludes the Kabbalistic cross and the lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram. So hopefully, for those of you listening, you enjoyed learning about and experiencing a bit of that technique for calling the archangels into your life. That was the Kabbalistic cross and the lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram. And this is just a reminder that on our website at fireflywillows.com/live, you can find the episode notes for each of our shows. And in the episode notes for this one, there is a detailed companion guide to this technique that you just heard, as well as other information about the topics and the guest on today's show. So, Nathaniel, welcome back.
Thank you.
I don't know if you're familiar with that technique, but I have found it to be an extremely powerful way to both call in, as you were talking about, as well as to experience the energies of the archangels, those four anyway. And, you know, it's quite an amazing sensation, I guess, is the only way to kind of say it. When you do that, especially if you just do it in a room and you're just in that technique, it's really kind of amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed.
I'm wondering if you can give us just a little bit of an idea of what it is that people can experience or look forward to when they have a reading or a session with you.
One of the most common experiences that people have shared with me is that it's a very encouraging experience, that it is a source of strength from which they can live their lives with more perspective and more understanding. And very often, in fact, not infrequently, possibilities manifest within the session that they weren't even conscious of. And that doesn't always happen, but it very often does. And there have been other times where what manifests is the sense that what is happening in their lives is actually for a reason, that there is some sort of spiritual meaning. There's something that they can learn from what's happening. And rather than just stepping through life as, oh, well, this is what's happened to me, we're actually meant to really deeply explore what it means to be who we are and what's going on in our lives. And so having a sense of the meaning of one's own life, one's own personal life, without exception, is consistently something that people experience.
And I'll just remind people that are listening, if you'd like a reading with Nathaniel right now, you can call in at 646-716-5510, or you can Skype in from the show page. So Nathaniel, when people come for a reading, can they come with specific questions about specific
yes.
things going on in their life,
yes.
or is it just
Absolutely.
They have to come and get whatever comes through?
Absolutely specific questions are encouraged, and I'll put it this way. Specific questions are all but required. What I have discovered in my own exploration of being in relationship and in conversation with the angels is that there is seldom more powerful a way to connect with the angels than from one's own authentic curiosity. And what that means is that if you have something that you would like to know or you'd like to know about, that is a wonderful point from which to begin that dialogue. Now, that doesn't always mean that things are going to rearrange exactly as you wish for them to. But it does mean, now, although it may, in fact, I've seen that happen many times, but it does mean that you're opening a dialogue that will bring a perspective of your highest good and happiness into your experience, into your picture, into your awareness in a very alive and real way. See, our lives are not merely mundane, disconnected, disparate experiences with no relationship to the greater good or to our own happiness. Our lives are actually meant to be deeply fulfilling explorations of the highest good as it manifests in our personal experience, which is to say that every relationship, every job, every place that you live, everything that you do, all of that is meant to be a joyous exploration of ultimate reality. And one of the things that the angels are always present to do is to be our teachers and also our reminders, because we forget, even when we know, of how that's true for us in a particular and specific way. We might have, there might be a friend or a coworker in our lives with whom we've had challenges and difficulties, and the angels may help us to see what it is that we're actually meant to be learning from that, because nothing is arbitrary. Absolutely nothing is arbitrary, especially things that you think are arbitrary. They're not. And very often the angels are happy to reveal what's going on from a perspective outside of simply, well, I guess that's what happened, whatever. There's always a clear happening going down from the angelic perspective. And often when we begin to share that awareness, that angelic divine perception or awareness, we begin to have tremendous joy around the details of our lives and just for the sheer joy of being human. We become more profoundly grateful because we see that our lives are woven into this beautiful tapestry of all that is, and that we're actually an integrated part, an integrated fullness of that, in fact. And the angels are there to offer that perspective to us in remarkable ways, and often very practical ways also.
And when somebody's coming to a reading with you, is there anything that you would recommend that they do in preparation for a reading? And in some ways, whether it's with you or with another reader, but just what you found, obviously besides thinking perhaps if they have questions, but is there anything else that you might recommend to them to be best prepared for coming into a reading?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I have a dear friend who I respect very much, and he's Scottish, so he doesn't say, quiet your mind. He'll say, quieten your mind. We Americans wouldn't say, quieten. We'd say, quiet your mind. He would say, quieten your mind. But that, I always hear his voice when I think about that. So, yes, quieten yourself if all you can. Whether that means you have to sit quietly and just pay attention to your breath, or it means you need to be well rested and make sure that you've gotten plenty of sleep the night before, or whether it means that you have the room in which you're going to be sitting when you're listening to the angels, that room's going to be orderly or that room's going to be quiet, all of this will support your ability to be receptive and to be listened. So what I say is just give yourself the support that you need to put yourself in a receptive frame of mind. Now, the reality is, however you show up, you're showing up, and showing up. It's a huge part of actually being able to receive messages from the divine, is showing up in order to receive them. And if you can show up with a receptivity and cultivate a receptivity in yourself to hear whatever is the truth, to hear whatever is love's word for you, to hear whatever is the highest good, if you can cultivate that receptivity and bring yourself in soul, that is, your experience of yourself, your feelings, your thoughts and such, and the energetic aspect of yourself and your physical body, you can bring yourself sort of fully in a way that's available to receive. That's generally when one receives the greatest sort of benefit, Although there's always a benefit from engaging in an inquiry with a divine dialogue or an angelic conversation. But if you can really cultivate that receptivity in yourself and be open to receiving the highest good and in a knowing of that that is what you will receive, it's really profound what you can have from that.
And if people wanted to contact you for a private session with you, they would just email you at nathaniel.evans@gmail.com.
Yes, and I wanted to say something about that. I forgot to answer your question about cost. What I'm doing right now is making 15 minutes available for free to anyone. That is a private session, one-on-one over the phone. So 15 minutes are free. If you'd like to be longer than that, I will discuss with you what is an appropriate donation for you, and you can make a donation to me and you can send it to me by PayPal, just in a gesture of love, respecting the service I'm offering. But basically, I want people to feel comfortable having at least 15 minutes where they have an opportunity just to hear whatever it is that they'd like to hear about or whatever question they have to ask. I want to make sure that everybody has at least 15 minutes and without regard to any funds at all. And I really mean that. It's important to me that people are free to receive. So please receive if you can.
And again, the email address for that is nathaniel.evans@gmail.com. And I think, you know, one thing I wanted to ask you about, you had said that one of the main themes that seems to be coming through for you right now is an exploration of the question, what should I do with my life?
Yes.
Can you expand on that a little bit as to how that's coming through and what that seems to mean?
There is a worthwhile book, which I believe has that title, What Should I Do With My Life? And it's a series of journalistic explorations of actual people who have really sat with that question in a profound way. And there are certain people that make that question important. Some of them may leave the world and go into a monastery. Some of them may travel several thousand miles away from the place where they were born to live someplace else on the planet. Some of them may get on a ship and cross the ocean, or perhaps just cross the street and visit a sick person. But basically, I'm interested in speaking to people who are in an inquiry about that, what they should do with their lives. And the reason I'm interested in that is because I have expertise with that. For whatever reason, I came into the world with a deep curiosity about what my life was for and what I should do with it. And not everyone seems to have that kind of curiosity or that kind of absolute need to inquire as to what is my life, what is my personal life for, what am I meant to be doing with it.
So I'm going to say, what if we see, we have a couple of people that have called in.
Yeah.
And so let's see if they're on that same wavelength with what they have to inquire about.
Yeah, and all questions are welcome, by the way. All questions.
So is this someone calling from area code 503? You're on the air?
Yes, that's Karen. It's Karen.
Oh, hi, Karen.
Can you hear me?
Hi, Karen. Yes, I can hear you.
And you're on the air with Nathaniel. If you'd like a reading and a message from the angels, if you can just let him know what it is you'd like to ask about.
And Karen, let me jump in and ask, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Oregon.
Okay, wonderful. Hi there, Oregon.
Hi. First of all, I want to say hi to you. Thank you for the show, and John and Deb. It's just great. I love Sunday mornings with you all, so I really appreciate that. And then, Nathaniel, I would also like to say that one of the musical pieces that you did on the show really blasted my heart open, so I really appreciate that.
You're so welcome.
I could feel the depth in the singing and in your voice, and it was coming through from your heart, and I really wanted to just honor you for that.
And thanks, Karen. I'm glad you enjoyed it, and thanks for letting me be of service that way.
You're welcome. I don't know that I have such a question. I mean, I have several questions. I have been in a housing battle up here in Portland, Oregon with my land. The land here is very sacred. I'm the steward. There's a lot of spiritual work that happens here on this land. My office is here, my art studio is here. And I have a foreclosure sale date on September 4th, 2012. I have fought this for the last 3 years on my own, and I think I'm going to be needing to raise some funds and hire an attorney, a good one, to get justice in this matter. So I don't know if that – I guess I'm needing some comfort or maybe some direction on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear that, Karen. I was reminded of what High C asked me, as he asks his guests, and it's funny how things work. So how is kindness present in your experience right now, or what does the idea of kindness mean to you in a practical way right now?
The idea of kindness?
Kindness, yeah.
Well, in a practical way, to be kind to myself, it would be number one. And to be gentle on myself for being in this situation, along with thousands of other Americans.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Would you spell it out a little bit more fully? You're saying you need to get an attorney, you need to... What are you looking to accomplish?
Oh, I'm looking to save my house and to save the land and to get a reasonable loan modification or some sort of damages for
mm-hmm.
what's occurred the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I've gone back and forth from exit strategy, sell the house, short sale, leave, move on to, you know what, I've got to keep fighting. My heart
yes.
is not ready to give up.
Yes.
The house is
well,
not my identity.
You should know that,
know
that if that? Heaven hears you when you say that, that your need is from your heart to keep fighting for this, that heaven hears that, and then it says, okay. So basically, what I would like for you is to really be supported by the angelic realm and by the presence of angels. So I'm going to ask that you'll be surrounded by angels in this process, and that your consciousness, that is your own personal awareness of yourself and also all the people involved in the situation and the physical land itself, will actually be surrounded and supported by angels. And I invite you to continually call them into this process and really be open to the possibility of miracles. That is actually, that's all that the divine ever is offering. There's nothing but miracles. It's all miracles. So really, really be open to that possibility and say what must be said, do what you have to do. But then what you have to do is after that, you have to let it go, so that you're not in any way dragged down by the scenario.
Right.
So it's really, really important. Do whatever you can. Use all the energies at your disposal, all the resources available, all the legitimate means. Use them, and use them well and rigorously,
mm-hmm.
and then let go. And know that what happens is a part of the greatest good, that's actually what's going to be manifest, and continually call in the highest good and ask for the angels to support you in understanding what that is and how to proceed. And I promise you, you will get clear and specific guidance.
Great. I appreciate it. Is there any particular angel that would be good for me to...
Yes, actually, two in particular that are really sort of obviously coming forward here. So Archangel Michael, as you I'm sure are aware, is often called upon for protection. And
right.
One of the things that the angels always want to remind us is ask for their presence more often. So when you have, if you have a negotiation or you have something that you know could become adversarial or where you feel like you need a defense or mm-hmm. any of these kinds of things that feel challenging, even on a soul level, if you feel, wow, I'm not at peace about this, that kind of thing, you want to mm-hmm. be protected against any negative emotions in yourself or any worries. You also want to be protected in the world in a physical sense. So invite Archangel Michael to be with you, to be near you, to guard this process, to actually guard the place, the physical property, to guard any negotiations, to support you in sending you the right people, the powerful. If you need to have a lawyer, be sure to call on Archangel Michael's protection and guidance. He can be sort of like a bouncer in your life to remove people from your life who need to be removed, and also to usher in people that need to be ushered in, to really be of service to you and you to them. So definitely call on Archangel Michael. And also, remember, Archangel Raphael is also famous for protection and for healing, and his presence can be incredibly valuable when you're going through an earthly situation that's difficult, because mm-hmm. you need to make sure that your own soul is not negatively impacted by what's going on the physical plane.
I know, I get that.
And so really invite Archangel Raphael to be with you, to be near you, to give you his healing energy and also guidance and protection. He's a very powerful protector, especially if an experience in the physical world is in any way putting your soul in a state of unrest. And he's just really wonderful to protect you in that case. The other thing is, the Archangel Gabriel is famous for speaking. So if you need to speak, you need to say something, or even to have somebody speak on your behalf, like a lawyer, you can ask for support from the Archangel Gabriel to make your words clear and strong and true and good. And when you ask him to speak for you or to speak through you, what you can find is that you begin to be able to speak the truth in a way that's loving and in a way that's also powerful. And in a way that's healing, in a way that brings about good. You'd be amazed at how you can use words in a way that has an incredible impact, and really ask for Archangel Gabriel's support, and he will absolutely offer that. And then just know, absolutely know, that you are being supported by the angelic realms, and that manifesting the highest good is what it is, what is at issue here, and that there's something for your soul to learn in this process. That's where the angels really want your attention to be on. And they want you also to know that they're with you. They want you to have comfort and to be courageous, knowing that you're not going this alone, that the suffering that you're going through is not without meaning, that there is something deep that you can enter into here. And actually, there can be a profound sense of comfort that the angels bring that's often far greater when we're going through a difficult experience or a difficult situation in life than when everything seems to be coming up roses.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Karen, for calling.
May the angels be with you and surround you and everything there, Karen.
Thank you. And, bye.
Yes,
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
And I just want to say that we're going to go ahead and take one more caller. If you're listening to the show, you'll probably hear it cut off in terms of the live broadcast. But if you want to hear the rest of the latter portion of the show, it will be available in the archives or the podcast.
I see. I don't know if this is relevant, but can you have other people call in who won't make it on the air? I'm willing to stay for at least another half an hour if people are calling in, just to say.
Well, I'll see if there's anybody else in the queue, but I know Anne from San Jose has been waiting. And Anne, are you there from San Jose?
I am.
All right.
Hi, Anne.
Hi, how are you?
Great. How are you this morning? I guess it's afternoon here. It's probably. How are you?
I'm doing well. And so the question that I have is, let's see, let me give a little bit of background. This year has been kind of crazy in terms of there's been a lot of change in my life, so I'm calling, I guess, the question that I have to do with relationships and loneliness and kind of fulfilling that need in my life. and I had some deaths occur earlier in the year. And then there's just been a lot of relationships, friendships, work experiences that are sort of like not working anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm finding myself in this place where, what the heck do I do now? And I'll go to events to try to meet people, and sometimes it works out, and sometimes I just get this sort of sense of loneliness.
Yes, yes.
And then I also have, you know, I happen to be single at this, you know, time in my life, and my daughter's, you know, grown up and moved on. So it's just I guess that's my challenge and my question to the angels is, it's not really what's going on, but how, what's the best approach, you know, to seek new relationships and friendships that are fulfilling and that sort of, just that are fulfilling and that I need in this time in my life.
Yes. Yes. By the way, I'm from San Jose, California. I was born and raised in San Jose, California.
Oh, good.
So I know exactly where you are.
Yeah.
And
it's a great place, and it's a busy place.
It's a very busy place. Yes, it's, you know, like Silicon Valley. Lots happening there, money wise and business wise. Kind of an amazing place in many ways. And how did you come to be there? Is that where you're from, or did you move there?
I'm actually from Bakersfield. And
okay.
So it's a much smaller town, community feel. And then I moved up here to college, and I've been here, you know, ever since. Kind of just got established here.
Got it. Okay, very good. Yeah, I'm in northern Florida now, but I was in the Bay Area my whole life. So I know Bakersfield.
Yeah.
So basically, the angels want you to know you're in a process right now, which is something that quite a number of human beings are experiencing. You're in a time in your life when you're looking for healthy human relationships, and yet it seems to be what there is a lot of. Am I right? Is there a lot of time alone for you? Do you have time with yourself?
Yes.
There's like lots of it, right?
Yes. A little bit too much.
Yeah, I completely understand. So, you said your daughter is grown up, and did you say she's married or moved away? Or
she's moved away. Yeah.
She's moved away. Okay. So, and how old is your daughter?
23.
Okay. So basically, you're in a space of singleness, and maybe this isn't exactly what you would be choosing, right?
Correct.
Okay. So the angels want you to know that there is a level on which your soul is choosing the experiences that you're going through right now. Now, I know to the conscious mind, to your thoughts, to your thinking awareness, and they feel like, well, yes, but I'm lonely. This doesn't seem healthy. I want you to know those are normal parts of you too. So we want to really honor and respect your soul here, because your soul, it's all about the development of your soul, the development of you as a human in a complete way.
Uh-huh.
And this lonely experience, they want you to know you're absolutely not alone in having that. Actually, at this time in history, we are setting records as a society, as a civilization, as a culture, for people that are in a lonely or in an alone space. Even though you're living in San Jose, California, which, for those of you who don't know, has more than 1 million people in it, and it's in the Bay Area, which is one of the largest metropolitan areas in the country or in the world. So it's not that there aren't humans around. There are humans everywhere. But what the angels are saying is that what you're yearning for, and what we as a race right now, they want you to know you're almost an archetype for people right now in our culture. You are desiring for real connectedness. Am I right?
Correct.
Yeah, and that's something that's an authentic human desire, and there is a way in which our culture has a missing around connectedness. So they want you to know this isn't arbitrary that you're feeling this way. The way that our culture is organized often leaves us separate, or feeling ourselves or thinking of ourselves as separate. So they want you to be able to come from a place in yourself other than what the culture provides, because especially the culture of Silicon Valley, remember this is where I'm from, it's a culture where human connections are not necessarily what are valued. What may be valued is the next IPO, the next great piece of technology, the next merger, acquisition, or it's a business, it's an intense business-driven place, and people from all over the world move in there. That's also sort of an archetype for the way that a lot of the mainstream world looks right now. It looks sort of disconnected, interested in money, and human connection is often marginalized. But what the angels are making available now, they want you to know, it is possible to come from a profoundly different place in yourself than the culture offers. See, the culture offers you, well, you know, you could do X, Y, Z to maybe meet some people, but that's still coming from a place of disconnectedness or coming from a place of separateness is the reality.
Mm-hmm.
See, actually, from a higher order of truth, oneness, connectedness, intimacy is the reality.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just to set that against, you know, a human experience, I recently moved to northern Florida from San Jose, California. Generally, the pace of life is much more relaxed and people are friendlier here. That's my experience being from San Jose, but that's not to say that profound intimacy and connection isn't available everywhere, because it is. What you're being guided to do here is to take that time when you're with yourself, by yourself, which you have plenty of, and cultivate that life in the most deep and beautiful way that you can, and then seek out opportunities to share that depth and that beauty with others. And because other human beings are always longing for something real, something beautiful, that will be met. It absolutely will be met. Be willing to move if you have to. Be willing to go places. Be willing to leave if you get a job offer in a different place. They're saying don't be attached to San Jose.
Mm-hmm.
But continually go within in those quiet places. Apparently, the truth is there's something that your soul actually needs about aloneness, about experiencing yourself in solitude. And that part of you is in charge. Strangely, as it may seem to your thoughts. So the part of you that knows that solitude is important. See, they also want you to be commended for a job well done with your daughter. I haven't met her. I don't know who she is, but they just were saying that. So you're a loving mother, apparently.
Yeah, I think I did a good job.
Yeah, and that's profound. That's absolutely profound. And loving and being loved is... Oh, they also want you to know that that energy that you were able to give her, that real maternal love,
mm-hmm.
that is what is most needed on Earth at this moment. Mm-hmm. It is just, it's as though there is a shortage of it. There never is a shortage of love, but the culture makes it out as though there is. And so people are in need of it. You may consider ways that you can contribute. There's a program like the Big Brother, Big Sister program,
mm-hmm.
where you have an opportunity to mentor a younger child of the same sex, to give a child who may not have healthy parental figures the kind of influence that your daughter got from you, which is a beautiful and sacred thing. And then also to form friendships around charity, around opportunities to give, or around spiritual service. These are ways where when you share a practice with another human being. Like, for example, Hi C and I have a connection in the realm of spiritual work. He does a kind of spiritual work. I do a kind of spiritual work. And there is a certain respect for each other that we have, and even an affection for each other that we have, which is a product of that there is something deep that we're able to share.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is something that happens as just the way human endeavor works. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So they're saying the more deeply connected to your own sacred work, to your own sense of who you are, whether that's to give love to a child or to be involved with giving to the homeless or whatever it may be, whatever good works you can do will give you an opportunity to connect with other people that also are coming from that same place, that have a desire to love, a desire to give, and then connections may form. You may find friendships in that place.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's something for you just to be with. And, you know, something may come to you when you sit in your aloneness and you really look at that. Something may come to you. Oh, I think, you know, I did hear about that, some sort of charity work. Or maybe I'll go and visit people at this convalescent hospital. Or who knows what may come to you. But that's something to be in mind of. Another thing they want you to know about. Do you have any relationship to the word inquiry?
I'm curious.
Okay, good.
I'm the only thing I can think of is, I'm inquiring a lot about a career change. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's the other thing that comes up. I'm inquiring about working with plant, you know, gardening, or inquiring
good.
About working with
you're
humanity.
You're being really commended for that, by the way. They're saying you're on the right track.
Okay.
Yeah, this is what we were saying earlier, how the angels are always whispering about anything that's germane to us. When you start mm-hmm. to listen is when you start to have thoughts like that. You're thinking about a career. They want you to know that those thoughts that you're having are evidence of a heavenly conversation that's going on that you're aware of.
Okay.
So you're on the right track and you're to be commended for that. But what they want you to know about is an area of human spiritual endeavor known as inquiry. You could explore the work of any number of spiritual teachers whose expertise is inquiry. One particularly famous teacher, who, just as an example, someone who's really famous for a kind of inquiry, have you heard of Byron Katie?
No.
You haven't heard of her? Okay. You might Google her. But there are many different well-known spiritual teachers, and some not very well-known, that are able to offer you a practice of inquiry. All it is where you're really deeply asking to know. Not necessarily to know, this is different than knowing about something. Like, I need to know how to change a tire, or I need to know if I should move to Des Moines. Inquiry is more concerned with knowing per se than knowing about anything. And
okay.
One of the things you will find, see, inquiry is actually interested in you discovering you and the way your life is occurring right now. Your daughter's moved away. You have a great deal of alone time. If you were several thousand years ago, they would say you're a nun. You've become a... That's what they would do. Your daughter would have moved away. You have lots of time to yourself.
Life's over.
And you get to sit and contemplate who you are. So basically, you have a perfect recipe for inquiry. But you know what? I actually happen to know of a very gifted spiritual teacher who's a woman who offers spiritual counseling sessions around inquiry. She has a very deep Buddhistic background, and she's really quite wonderful. I would be happy to, if you want to send me an email, I will
sure.
connect you to her and to her work. Her expertise is inquiry, and also her husband's expertise is inquiry. And there's quite a wonderful spiritual community in specifically your area, in the San Jose and Los Gatos area, around their work. It's all spiritual work around inquiry, to know who you are in a mm-hmm. in a direct sense. And what's wonderful is, if you begin to become a part of that kind of a work, you will become connected to the people who are doing that work.
Right.
It's just very simple. It's a deep, deep practice. And when you engage in a profound way in any endeavor as a human being, you're just going to begin to have an intimacy with the others who care about that.
Mm-hmm.
And there are lots of profound things that you'll discover, I promise you. And the angels are just almost... I'm gleeful right now because you have such, and so am I, because you have so much to explore and to discover. You have no idea how wonderful are the things that we revealed. And they want you to know that when human connection comes out of spiritual curiosity and real goodness of heart, it is the most profound and deep and rewarding and satisfying and beautiful intimacy that you can possibly have.
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing that some folks only experience, like the way you may love your daughter. You know you love your daughter in a way that's just pure. You just love her, right?
Right. Absolutely.
So the angels want you to know that kind of love between yourself and other human beings is available, and it's often most easy to access it when there are spiritual practices or something deeply moving and important to you that you're involved around, the kind of altruistic work, you know, like Mother Teresa was famous for. I have friends who have traveled with people like her, and the bonds that form between people that are doing that kind of work are sacred and profound. The kind of bonds that are, like I said, it's the same nature of the love that you may feel for your daughter, a totally pure love. And to be loved back by another human being in that way is, of course, very rewarding and marvelous and teaches us a lot.
Right. No, I get that very much, and I guess that's why I feel outside of things a lot is I think I just operate on a level that's, I don't care about a lot of stuff. I care about the earth, you know. I mean, I care about kind of intense, heavy things. And
yes,
it's, you know, not everybody wants to talk about it, I guess.
That's so true. That's so true. And yet the angels really want you. They're underlining this. This is like a big magic marker in fluorescent colors coming down from heaven. They're underlining this. But some people do.
Okay.
And you're evidence for that that's true.
Okay.
There's a really old story in the Old Testament. There's this prophet, and he really thinks, he has some idea as though he's the only person anymore that cares about really being intimate with God and understanding the truth. He really thought that. And he was in a cave by himself. And he got really, really depressed. He said, God, just kill me. He actually wanted God to kill him. And God said, no, there's this group of like 5,000 people, and they're over here. He actually told them where to go.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all interested in exactly what you are. You're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
But he thought he was.
Yeah.
And that can be very, very depressing. You have to know that that isn't true. That even though you live in an area where there's, you know, more than 1 million people just in San Jose, you don't need even 100,000 people to be interested in what you are. You might need like 10 with whom you can be sort of close and related.
Uh-huh.
Or maybe 2 with whom you can be intimate, or even, you know, a group of a few dozen or a few hundred or whatever in which you can sort of move and have connections. And they want you to know there are plenty of people actually quite close to you.
Okay.
I have a sense it may be close to where you live, even in San Jose. You may be surprised.
And can I add something there?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Can you jump in, please?
Because, you know, the story with the prophet, he was in a cave. So you have to wonder, how is he going to meet or come across those 5,000 other people if he stays in the cave? And something that Nathaniel alluded to earlier was there was an aspect of you having to start putting yourself out there, going out there too. And it may be that you have to start using inquiry to research and find groups or organizations, whether it's through, say, meetup.com or just a Google search of groups, people in your area that are meeting and have similar kind of interests that you can then go to and become a part of and start to connect with. And I can guarantee you will find them, just as Nathaniel has indicated, that, you know, there are other people out there that are interested in the same things, concerned about the same things, want to talk about the same things. Now maybe it's just time to be more proactive in being inquiring and to say, what is there that can cause me to feel motivated to come out of my cave to them, rather than waiting in my cave for something to come to me?
Right. That's I get that. Thank you.
Now, you happen to be near San Francisco.
Yes.
Now, when I was in my 20s, I had to move from San Jose to San Francisco because I found that more of my interests, creatively, spiritually, and otherwise, were met by people who lived there, and so I just moved. But I was willing to move, and now I've moved much farther for other reasons.
Yeah.
Creative. And basically, that willingness to move and to go, I think, is what I see is getting at. When we have a willingness to actually just go and explore, there's things that can show up that won't show up if we're not willing to. And it just so happens there are some wonderful things you can explore right there in San Jose. But you also may find, especially if you're interested in preserving the earth, if you get on meetup.com, like Heisi said, there's some tremendous meetup groups that are Bay Area wide, especially with environmental interests or interests about. One, yeah, I used to go to in San Francisco was the organic and raw foods meetup group. Wonderful meetup group, met all kinds of interesting people. And there are lots of interests which may speak to you. If you just put some feelers out, be willing even to travel a little bit for the sake of a connection with those who are like to you in soul. And the more you cultivate your own soul and an awareness of yourself, the more your connection with others will also have depth and profundity. And please do email me. I will be, like I said, definitely connecting you to that teacher who does inquiry who's quite near you. And I'm sure there are many rewarding connections that are just waiting around the corner for you.
And I'm just going to give you really quick one organization you could look into. And it's in the Bay Area, and it's called the Earth Medicine Alliance. And you can just go to earthmedicine.org, and that may be some place to start. And one of the people that I know is part of that does something else that I don't know. Because you talk about connection with others, and there's a lot of ancestral work that they do. And so you might also look into that, but especially with the earth that you indicated is something that you're really concerned about, I think the Earth Medicine Alliance would be really good for you to perhaps start at or check out to find people that are both interested and concerned in what it is that you are, as well as doing things to help and support the earth, both on a tangible level as well as on a spiritual level through ritual and that kind of thing.
That's great. Thank you. I love the name.
You're very welcome. And there is something that the angels want you to know, that what you're experiencing right now, the loneliness, the aloneness, the desire for connection, all of this is the series of lessons that your soul is choosing. They want you to know this is not arbitrary. This is not an oh, woe is me. There's something profound to be met in your life right now, and it's what you're experiencing. This is a profound thing.
Okay.
They also want you to know something. Start from the understanding that connection is what's real. See, our culture sells us that being separate is what's real, and then you have to overcome the separateness.
I know.
if you start with that as your assumption, even your efforts to connect with others may feel haphazard and challenging, and like circumstances keep getting in the way. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I figured you did. Yeah, I could feel that you would know just what I'm talking about. So, because you've been having a disposition that separateness is true, and I'm telling you, it's not true. What's true is connection. What's real is oneness. And that means everybody out there that you're touching in any way is in some way, at some level, actually profoundly intimate with you in a way that's mysterious, but it's also real.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you have to do is start with it, connection is real, start with it, intimacy is real, start with it, oneness is real, and then you make your connections from that.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It does. It absolutely does.
And know that, and I think that's why I mentioned the ancestral work, because ultimately we're never disconnected, because we're always connected to our ancestors, be they bloodline or spiritual ancestors, but also so we're connected to the past in that way, and they can offer us guidance and wisdom, but also we're connected to the future because we're actually the ancestors of those that come after us. So we're always in a point of connection, sometimes not quite as obvious with people around us in physical form, but if you maybe cultivate a little bit of understanding or work with the ancestral side of things, you may also start to feel much less disconnected and more connected in a larger way.
Yes. No, that sounds perfect, actually, because that's kind of how I feel anyway. But I, But I do have a lot of family members and friends who have passed, so I like that idea a lot.
Yeah. And that Earth Medicine Alliance, the reason I wanted to point it out too is because not only the work that they do with the Earth, but like in October, they have a conference in San Francisco for a weekend called Celebrating Ancestral Wisdom, and it has various presenters and things that are all geared around that, but they're mainly from earth-honoring traditions, so you kind of get a combination of the things that you're mentioning all in one fell swoop.
Very good. Well, thank you, gentlemen, very much. This has been great.
Please know you're connected to the both of us now, and you're very welcome to use your connection to me as in any way you like. You know how to get in touch with me. And also, I know that Hi-C is just, he is one of the most generous people I know as far as connecting people with people. It's really, it's a tremendous thing. And I know that you have the opportunity to benefit from his work in that way also.
Very much so. I've talked to you before, Hi-C. I don't know if you remember, but I do appreciate you very much and this blog you've got going. So.
Well, thank you. And thank you very much for calling in and taking advantage of this too. Hopefully there's not just a little bit, but much in there that is helpful for you.
I think there is. So I will be in touch with both of you in the future.
All right.
So glad. That's wonderful. Thank you for calling.
Okay. You're welcome. Bye-bye.
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 So, Nathaniel, thank you very much for spending some extra time and for being here on the show. I've enjoyed it. Hopefully you've enjoyed it.
Very
much. And hopefully we might have a chance in the future to have you back and talk a little more, as well as maybe offer some more readings for people and things.
Yes, please have me back. And as soon as you like, I am just more than happy to be back on the air, and I'm just delighted to connect with people and to be useful in this way. So, yes, please do call upon me whenever you like.
And I just want to remind people that you can contact Nathaniel at nathaniel.evans@gmail.com. And as he mentioned, he is offering a free 15-minute reading to anyone who contacts him. And you can certainly do longer, but you always have the opportunity for at least a 15-minute session to connect with the angels through him if you just email him and get in touch with him in order to do that. So thank you very much, Nathaniel, and that brings us to the end of our show. And we will look forward to having you listen next week, which will be Convergence with John Carosella. And I would encourage you to tune in for that. And until then, we want to say thank you and farewell for now from Firefly Willows Live.
Thank you for joining us on today's episode of Firefly Willows LIVE. We hope you enjoyed the show. Join us next week as John Carosella hosts Convergence. John will talk with three extraordinary women in two fascinating conversations. First, John talks with Annette Wagner about play and the creative process. Annette, a visionary artist, creativity teacher, and coach, has been coaching and mentoring clients for over 12 years in going around, over, and under challenging issues, transforming them in the process. Then he's joined by Wendy Marie and Raina Satori in a conversation about dance and sacred play. Wendy is the creator and host of Shamanic Disco Ecstatic Dance here in Silicon Valley. She creates sacred space and draws you into the powerful healing environment of movement medicine. Raina is a performance artist and dancer with a gift for contact improv, where being in your body leads you into being in the moment, the perfect tool for experiencing the now. John also hosts next week's roundtable on Play, a Primer for Us Serious Folks, and reflects on the long shadows of August, The Magician, and more. This is Deb Carosella. Please join us next Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. Pacific Time on Firefly Willows LIVE, Blog Talk Radio.